I'll see what I can do.
The invasion occurred without the slightest warning. The city council building exploded in an inferno, followed by much of the palace district. Velthrin responded to the disaster promptly, but incorrectly. Fire brigades were sent to the 6 sites of the disasters, and of course, some of the local guard went to investigate, but not a full military response. No one had the slightest hint of what was truly happening until it was too late. As rescue forces reached the scenes, they were promptly slaughtered. Only a small contingent of off-duty paladins who had been near the scene managed to survive and escape. Without their warning, Velthrin may have fallen without even putting up a proper fight. But even that alert came far too late. They did not have the slightest hint of who they faced. Baltheus. His sorcery was on a scale that had not been seen since the vanishing of the gods, and he leveled it against the people of Velthrin without the slightest hint of restraint. Within days, it was clear that the battle against him was a lost cause. From there, efforts turned away from triumph and toward an effort that once might have been unimaginable, evacuating the most powerful city in the known world. Jonan closed his book and set it down on the table to his side, then yawned and rubbed at weary eyes. It had been another long night. He was reading the 3rd book he discovered that dealt with this time period, The Fall of Velthrin, which supposedly took place 2 years in the future. In all cases, details were vague, but they mentioned someone, Baltheus, who destroyed the city with unparalleled sorcerous power. Jonan had never heard of a Baltheus before. A pseudonym, then? Or a title rather than a name? Or maybe a name from a non-Velthrin language? Zixian, maybe? There could still be remnants of the Zixian Empire on other continents, or even just a small contingent here. There was that one Esharin we found in Orlan.
More poison? Tervis asked, lowering his own book just enough to examine Jonan. His soft tone didn't betray a hint of humor, but the corner of his mouth was just slightly askew. Jonan waved a hand at him.
No, thank you. He took a deep breath. What are you reading today?
Tervis lowered his book again. The writing on the cover was in a language Jonan didn't recognize, which was a rarity.
A primer on the Edrian Empire on the continent of Caldwin.
Jonan raised an eyebrow.
That's quite the jump from your usual perusal of forbidden arts and ancient secrets.
Tervis gave him a fuller grin.
Call it a personal research project.
Jonan sighed, slipping the next book off his pile and into his lap. He didn't open it.
Isn't that something you could read when you're not in the restricted archives?
You'd be surprised how much isn't out there.
Tervis waved to the doorway back to the library proper.
And how rare it is to get a chance to peruse these things. I'd advise you to make the best of it. Maybe spend a few extra weeks on researching the Shrouded One.
Meaning I should spend a few extra weeks so that you can have access to this place longer without having to request it for your own personal use.
Precisely.
Tervis paused.
But for your own benefit as well, of course.
Well, at least he's honest about his goals. Or some of them, anyway. I don't think I have that long. This is a somewhat time-sensitive matter.
Unfortunate, but I suppose we must all do what we can with the time we're given.
Jonan raised an eyebrow at that.
Is that supposed to be as foreboding as it sounds?
Tervis just smiled.
You never know.
Ugh, fine, be like that. Jonan sighed. Unrelated question. One of my compatriots, Silk, is supposed to be in the city.
He had to calculate his next words carefully. Even if he hadn't been drinking tea that was doused with a truth-forcing poison, he trusted that Tervis seemed like the type to be able to evaluate obvious lies.
Have you heard anything about her whereabouts or recent activities?
Tervis raised an eyebrow.
Isn't she another one of Ayara's agents? I'd trust that you'd know more about her than I do.
Things are complicated when you work for Ayara. She plays a lot of games. One of her favorites is deprive my own agents of information and see how they handle it. I have other ways of reaching out to Silk, but simply asking someone who might know is often the easiest route.
Is this the sort of game that ends poorly for uninvited participants?
Jonan smiled.
Ah, I don't think a simple request like this would involve you too heavily. This is more of a time-saving measure on my part.
I note you didn't answer my question.
Jonan smiled.
Correct.
Tervis leaned back.
I want in.
Jonan blinked.
You,
Excuse me?
The game. I'm not looking to avoid whatever Ayara is playing. I want an introduction.
After a moment of consideration, Jonan responded with, I can make some arrangements, if what you provide is sufficiently useful.
Excellent.
I'll have something for you within a week, unless you need something sooner.
Jonan hesitated, then shook his head. No, a week is fine. He trusted that he could keep Velis from running off and doing something foolish for that long, but not much longer.
That reminds me. Did you set up the meeting that I requested?
Tervis nodded.
My adjutant, Married Kaelin, will accompany you to a meeting place for the Disciples of the First in 3 days. She'll provide you, or rather your new identity, with an introduction. From there, you'll need to establish yourself with the local branch.
What did you end up going with?
Thorngard working for Velthrin's division. You're here to meet with the Shrouded One and report something. You can come up with the details. You've been to Velthrin more frequently.
Jonan grunted.
What Thorngard division?
Blackstones.
He watched Jonan as he said it, clearly evaluating his reaction. Jonan sighed.
Really? You're making me an assassin?
You looked like the type with some experience with wet work. I figured you could manage it if you need to.
Tervis's tone was as soft and even as always, but his eyes showed a hint of amusement.
You know they're going to want me to... Oh, fine. He rubbed at his temples. I'll make it work.
I'll be interested to hear the results.
Tervis set his book down.
You will be reporting back to me on your findings, won't you?
Jonan shrugged.
We'll see.
Tervis's eyes narrowed for just a moment.
I suppose we will.
Then he went back to reading his book. 3 days came and went. Jonan sent some important messages to some of the mirrors he'd left behind in Velthrin. The first was to a private residence. The second was to a Thorngard base.
Need you to get out of town quickly and quietly. Stay gone until I contact you again. Can't explain the details right now. It's going to be a little messy for a while. Sorry. We'll update soon.
Scour. Going to need you to do some cleanup and information control. Details will be sent shortly. High priority work related to Symphony. We'll need a report as soon as it is completed. Scribe.
After each of those brief notes, he sent a list of instructions.
This is going to cost me some favors, but it's a necessary precaution. I hope they can get things done soon. For now, more reading.
His studies continued throughout that time, focusing on the unusual historical records that the Disciples of the First used, but with some time dedicated to his own personal studies as well. He was simply too curious about the items in the crystalline cases not to give them a look at least. There were a total of 8 compartments, but only 4 of them currently appeared to be occupied. With a moment of concentration, Jonan's vision changed, and he realized there was a 5th occupied case. The item inside and identification card were simply both invisible. Every single compartment had runes carved into the sides, making them Dominion-marked items in their own right. Jonan examined the contents of each box. The first contained what looked like a simple metal rod. Zixian Artifact Remnant. This scepter was found heavily guarded within a Zixian vault, but with no indication of its purpose. It radiates tremendously potent chaos sorcery. It is believed to potentially be one portion of Cesius, the Staff of Dissonance, an artifact once wielded by the Zixian Emperor. Currently under research to authenticate its abilities, activation methods, dangers, and potential relationship with Cesius.
Jonan pondered that for a moment. They say the Heartlands might be a part of Cesius too. If this thing is another component, maybe they could be combined somehow.
He shook his head. He could look into getting it as a gift for Velis later if he decided he wanted to risk looting this entire place at some point. At the moment, that was an unnecessary risk. The next was a black-bladed dagger with a crossguard that looked like a stylized blue rose. The Wilting Flower. This dagger is believed to originate from the world of Rendalir. It is one of the most complex Dominion-marked items known, possessing travel, ruin, shade, knowledge, spirit, and deception sorcery. It appears to shift to different locations inside its box when unattended. Our agents have reported disturbing feelings while carrying and studying the object, as well as unusual desires to remove it from its container. Observe with extreme caution. Jonan reread the description, then decided he would absolutely not be opening that case. The last thing I need is a potentially sapient dagger from another planet to worry about. He shook his head, then turned toward the next case. The third was a simple silver ring with a large red crystal. Hartigan's Star Replica. This replica of Hartigan's Star was forged by the Blackstone Assassin as a gift for Symphony. As a reproduction of Hartigan's Star, it possesses deadly flame sorcery abilities. It can also be utilized to enhance the abilities of an existing flame sorcerer. The command word for activation is ignition. At Symphony's request, the library is currently attempting to discern if the ring had hidden enchantments intended to be traps for the wearer. Jonan snorted at the second line. That definitely seemed like the type of gift Jacinth would give Ayara, and he would be shocked if it didn't have some kind of deadly tricks built into it. The fourth was a blue hat with a white feather. The Hat of Tricks. This hat appears to be linked to an extra-dimensional space that can be used to store and retrieve items, similar to the legendary Jaden box. One can simply reach inside the hat and concentrate to attempt to pull out a stored object, or place a new object inside the hat to store it. When storing an object, one must think of a word that corresponds to that object in order to store it for later. There does not appear to be a function that tells the user what objects are already inside, nor have we found a function for emptying it out entirely. As such, we have been asked to research what objects the hat already contains. Dozens of objects have already been found inside. We currently have no indication of what the hat's maximum capacity may be, if any. Do not attempt to wear the Hat of Tricks. And finally, the invisible item. It was an amulet containing a single heart-shaped crystal. The note read, Amulet of the Unfaltering Spirit. Once one of Valian's personal possessions, this amulet was said to strengthen the connection between the wearer's body, essence, and spirit, bolstering all three. It provides near immunity to offensive death and spirit sorcery, as well as resistance to other effects which interfere with the wearer's essence. This object is stored for research by Vakas Saffron. No unauthorized research is permitted. Jonan considered each, then made a choice that he knew would come with significant risks.
Can we open these safely? Jonan asked.
Sure. I've got the code phrases. You can study them while you're in here, but you can't take them across the line.
He gestured to the line in the floor.
You need specific permission for that, and given what you seem to be here for, I don't think either one of us is getting it.
Jonan nodded.
That won't be a problem.
After getting that explanation, Jonan dove into reading a bit in the journal entries about each item. From there, he had Tervis open the cases for the ones he wanted to look at in more detail, inspected the runes on each item, and took some of his own notes.
I heard you'd done some research on Dominion marks. Going to try to make copies of those items?
Tervis asked. Jonan smiled.
Not exactly.
Working without letting Tervis know what he was doing would be tricky, but he wasn't going to squander a rare opportunity. The void shield on the library will make anything I do in here virtually undetectable, hopefully even to someone like the Shrouded One. I need to make every moment in here count. And so, while Tervis was distracted with his own books, Jonan did some subtle work. His arms and eyes burned in the aftermath, but that was a cost he was glad to pay. Beyond examining the items in the case, he spent some time simply reading a few of the more obscure books he wouldn't ordinarily have access to. There was no reason not to study time sorcery while he had a chance, after all. It would take much more than a few days of practice to learn to utilize it, but he had a foundation in the theory behind it now, and a smattering of knowledge about other obscure sorceress disciplines the restricted section had offered. I can see why Tervis likes this place so much. I'm going to miss it. On the fourth day, he received instructions and paperwork for his latest persona, as well as a meeting point from his new contact. At least a Blackstone doesn't have to wear full armor, he considered.
But I look ridiculous.
Jonan was dressed in black utilitarian clothes, with a longsword on his left hip and a pouch containing a mask and supplies on his right. This wasn't an unusual outfit by Salir's standards. It was quite similar to what Tervis had worn when they'd first met, in fact. Although Jonan was missing the chain armor beneath the blacks, and, admittedly, he was also lacking Tervis's muscular physique. It wasn't that Jonan was out of shape, exactly. Being out of shape implied he'd ever been in shape in the first place. Regardless, the outfit served its purpose. He looked exactly like the archetype of what one might expect a Blackstone to look like, with a few minor details to prevent it from being an obvious costume. A locket around his neck added some degree of personalization, as well as a well-worn pair of bracers. He'd picked up a sword that looked worn but well-maintained. His boots contained two daggers, concealed just badly enough that someone might notice them. Once he was as ready as he could be, he headed to the designated meeting point. It wasn't a sketchy tavern or a rooftop like he might have expected for a covert mission. Instead, he knocked on the door of an old blacksmith shop.
"I'm here about the last-minute order," he said after knocking.
The door slid open. The woman on the other side was wearing a heavy apron and thick gloves. She had a wide, muscular build that looked suitable for the blacksmithing hammer she was carrying in her left hand. She didn't bother to set it down.
"Mr. Calloway?"
She shifted her weight as she asked, casually enough that it didn't appear too threatening, but Jonan recognized someone who was ready to swing a weapon. He nodded.
"And Ms. Kalen, was it?"
The woman relaxed just slightly.
"Come in and close the door behind you. I'll get cleaned up."
Jonan stepped in, shutting the door.
"I wasn't aware you did actual work here,"
the woman snorted.
"Tava says that making weapons helps you learn to use them more intuitively. Really, I think he just wants me to pick up his family business."
Jonan nodded.
"His father was a blacksmith, yes?" "Yep, and he was too for quite a while, both before the Thorn Guard and during a portion of his service."
She set down the hammer, then moved about the shop rapidly, picking up tools and supplies and moving them into cabinets. Jonan waited patiently until she finished, then slipped off the apron and gloves.
"You probably already know, but I married Kalen, his adjutant."
Jonan reached out and clasped her wrist in a traditional greeting.
"Vincent Calloway, Blackstone Division." "Right, sure you are."
Married winked at him.
"How much have you been briefed on?"
"Their holy scriptures. Very little about their numbers, organization, leadership structure, specific personnel, resources."
"Ugh,"
Married grunted.
"Leaving all the hard work to me as usual." "Fine, I'll walk you through it. It's going to have to be quick, though, if we're going to make it to tonight's meeting."
"Tonight's meeting?"
"Listen carefully, and when we're there, just follow my lead."
After speeding through a bit of explanation about the organization, Married led Jonan to an unexpected place to meet with the disciples of the First. Jonan was more than familiar with the structure. The Crescent Thorn was one of the oldest places in the city. It was an 8-story tower of dark green stone with a slight curve to the shape, giving Jonan the impression of a claw. The shape of it always made him nervous. It didn't look at all structurally sound. Sorcery was likely involved in the construction, but that didn't make him much less nervous. Sorcery was just as fallible as stone if you hit it in the right place. That was not the part that truly made him cautious, though.
"This is a temple of Valian. What are they thinking using a place like this?" "I presume they're thinking they can get away with whatever they want, given their connections and supposed visions of the future."
Married pointed at the top of the tower.
"The Shrouded One lives up there, at least supposedly. I've never actually seen her."
"Her." Interesting choice of words there. Jonan paused. "Does that imply she's someone involved with the Order of Valian? A high-ranking priest or official?"
"Don't know. Haven't been able to get close enough to identify her yet. Only people who get to meet her are the ones that are performing tasks to ensure the integrity of the future."
"Hmm.
Hmm?
I can work with that. Let's go to this meeting first, though." She led him to the temple gates, but rather than bringing him in through the front door, they moved around the side of the building toward the back and then into a garden. That garden gave way into an area with high walls of plants, causing Jonan to groan again.
A hedge maze. Of course there's a hedge maze.
The meeting will be at the center. Stay close to me.
Jonan did stay close to her, but not where she expected. A simple gesture, while she wasn't looking, created an image of Jonan, or rather, Vincent, a few feet away from his actual location. He then made himself invisible. He didn't expect to be backstabbed here, but precautions were important. A few minutes of walking took them to the center of the hedge maze. Jonan tried his best to memorize the route so he could return without Mairead if necessary. The center of the maze had a fountain with two statues above it. One represented Valian, raising his namesake sword skyward. To his left was a statue of a Rethri woman holding a harp. Stories about her identity varied significantly, and Valian himself refused to address the topic. Jonan's personal theory was that she was Valian's queen back when he had been a mortal king, but historical records of that time period were notoriously unreliable. He didn't have much time to think about religious theory. There were five people around the statue, all wearing the most stereotypical cult hooded robes he'd ever seen. Each of them also wore a blank face mask, but with a slightly different symbol on the forehead of each: a gem, a sword, a flower, a shield, and a musical note. That last one was particularly interesting. Musical notes were generally used as code by the orchestra, Ayara's organization of thieves. The particular note on this mask signified doctor. The use of that note might have been a coincidence. Ayara wasn't the only one who used musical symbols, of course, but it was worth noting. Jonan mentally labeled all of the robed figures based on their mask symbols and resolved to look them up later. Flower Mask stepped forward.
This is the newcomer?
Not a newcomer exactly. Mairead waved for Jonan to step forward, and he did. Vincent is visiting from our division in Veltrin.
Here to beg for more support? Swordmask asked.
Jonan shook his head. Not at all. I'm here to report something important. Something that needs to go to the top of the chain.
We'll determine if that is necessary,
Gemmask replied.
What can you tell us?
Precious little. He had to measure his words carefully. You're aware of the failures about 10 months ago? The hooded figures looked at each other, then looked back to him.
Your division reported that as a success.
He shrugged. Political talk. It was a limited success. Some pieces remained on the board.
This is the first I've heard of such a thing.
Swordmask folded his arms.
Are you meaning to imply that we were given inadequate information before?
Jonan shrugged.
I don't know exactly what you were told. But the fact of the matter is that we lost agents and left a mission incomplete. I have an important update to deliver on that subject. Given how pressing certain issues are with Veltrin in the coming months, he left that line to linger for a moment. I'm sure you understand the need for everything to be perfect. There was a moment of silence. Some of the figures leaned in to whisper to each other. Jonan heard them anyway. Velas hadn't managed to teach him much sound sorcery, but amplifying and focusing his hearing was among the easiest spells possible.
This is likely about the Theus incident,
Gemmask whispered.
I was under the impression that was being dealt with by a third party. Some random underling shouldn't know about that, and I've never heard of this Vincent before,
Swordmask replied. Flowermask replied,
He's probably one of Sterling's. That man is awful about keeping secrets. I don't know why he'd be coming back here, but we need to know what he knows.
Mairead smiled and raised a hand. Can we head in and deliver the report directly?
What's your connection with this, Miss Kaelin? I wasn't under the impression you had contacts with the Veltrin branch.
Jonan waved a hand. I approached her. My superior listed her as a first-layer contact for this city.
I wasn't just going to show up here and talk to you without an introduction.
Mairead shot him a questioning look. That wasn't quite what they'd discussed before, but now, based on the whispered contacts, he wanted to create an impression that he was already well established in their organization. Fortunately, she adapted quickly.
He followed proper protocol. He hasn't reported anything to me directly, but he made it clear that this is a correction and that needs to be addressed by a proper authority.
A correction? Gemmask folded his hands.
Of what nature?
I'm pleased to report a successful historical correction. Two, in fact, Jonan smiled. I am, of course, required to deliver the evidence of something of this magnitude directly.
Evidence? And what exactly do you have to deliver?
Jonan grinned. Two coffins. Occupied. Chapter 16. Velus 4. A Variety of Silks. Velus had a variety of skills, but waiting patiently was not among them. It might have been the safer option to lie low and wait for Jonan to bring her the answers she needed, but that simply was not her style. And beyond that, she had certain obligations and loose ends to take care of. As Aladir and Lydia made their way out of the city, she stepped out from behind a tree and into the center of the road. They both reacted quickly, reaching for weapons before they realized who they were looking at.
Velus!
Lydia lowered her cane, shifting back to a neutral stance.
Where have you been? Riala has been looking everywhere for you.
I bet she has, especially given she's currently the most likely suspect for another silk trying to replace me.
Been a bit busy.
Velus gave a strained smile.
Things went bad with my little investigation. I asked our mutual friend to send you a message.
He did, but it was painfully vague.
Lydia folded her arms.
You could have at least written a note yourself. Would have helped verify that you were actually safe. A message from him might have just been buying time to hide a body.
Please, you think that scrawny boy could handle me?
Velus laughed. Lydia wrinkled her nose.
Poison doesn't care how strong you are, as I'm certain you know from experience.
Velus had plenty of ways to deal with poison, but she didn't need to let Lydia in on that. Instead, she simply nodded and tried unsuccessfully to look apologetic.
Fine, fine. I'll be more careful. The important part is that I'm here now checking in.
She patted her arms.
See? Fully intact.
Aladir took a few steps forward and poked her.
Seems like it.
Hey!
Velus smacked his hand aside.
What was that for?
Checking if you're actually here.
Aladir smiled.
That's easy enough to fake.
True enough.
She sighed.
Look, I'm sorry I vanished for a while, but I'm going to have to do it again.
Reason?
Lydia asked.
I'm being hunted by someone dangerous.
All the more reason you should come with us.
Aladir gestured toward the road.
Harder to find you out there, and we'll have considerable protection.
Lydia shot him a look, and Aladir went silent.
Protection?
Velus snorted.
I don't need protection. I need to find a person who is looking for me before they find me.
That's reckless.
Lydia frowned.
And if it's tracking that you need, I'm the one who should be doing it.
Thought of that. I don't have anything for one of your tracking spells to hook into.
Not yet.
Maybe I'll come to you if I find something and my leads dry up before you get back to town.
We could be gone quite some time, Aladir noted. You'll be on your own.
No, I won't be.
Velus shook her head.
I have backup.
The scrawny lad you dismissed a moment ago?
Lydia adjusted her glasses. Velus gave a shrug.
I'm not asking him to fight someone for me. He's good at what he does, and I think we have a lead on the location of the Shrouded One.
And you were going to tell us about this when?
Lydia took a step forward.
That's pretty important. Easy there. We just found out, and I need to verify it. I'm going to do it soon. But in the spirit of cooperation, I'll tell you what I know. Rumor is that she, and they said she, is on the top floor of the Crescent Thorn. At least some of the time.
Aladir looked at Lydia.
That's a holy sight. She must have considerable influence if she's up there.
Noted.
Lydia turned to Aladir.
Perhaps we should all head there before we leave? This seems like an important enough opportunity to delay our other task.
Let me handle it. As Aladir said, it's a holy sight. I can get in. A couple of paladins aren't going to make it through the front gates without causing suspicions. If you spook her, she might flee.
That's a fair objection. But we could lay a trap for her. You could lure her outside, perhaps, or flee to us if you get in trouble or injured.
If you set up anywhere nearby, you'll be noticed. I honestly don't think this is worth your time. My lead could turn up nothing.
Lydia glanced between the two of them, then nodded, mostly to herself.
Aladir, stay here. Coordinate with Velus. Velus, try to lure the Shrouded One back to Aladir so that you can confront her as a team.
That's going to make this more difficult for me, not less.
Velis sighed. But I suppose having a healer on hand in case things go badly isn't terrible.
Fine. I'll handle it. But you're going to have to be cautious, Eladir. If you're caught looking suspicious right outside, it's going to make things much messier for me.
I'm Rethri. If I throw on some dark clothes, no one in this city is going to give me a second look.
He had a point. Okay. We'll make it work. She turned to Lydia.
Where are you headed? Rin Jaden. She supposedly has information that might help us. And Talion is with her.
Velis felt an unexpected tightness in her chest.
Wait, Sal? I knew he was in the region, but he's on an unrelated assignment. Or one that we thought was unrelated, at least. Eladir can fill you in on the details. I'm going to get going.
You going to be safe on your own? Velis asked.
As I said, I'm going straight to where Talion is located. And Asphodel should be there too.
Velis hesitated for a moment. Lydia must have caught something in her expression.
You look like you have something you want to say. Lissari keep you healthy.
You too.
Lydia raised an eyebrow but said nothing further.
Take care of her, Eladir. And yourself.
Always.
Eladir gave Lydia a nudge. See you soon.
Let me send Jonan a message to inform him we're going to have company. Then we'll get you some new clothes.
No need. I already have a civilian outfit.
Eladir motioned to the backpack on his back.
In dark colors?
Velis raised an eyebrow.
You don't seem like the type.
Black is one of the Teos Pantheon's colors, you know. Blue and silver are more prominent, but it's still one of them.
Sure, but you worship Lissari. I'd expect more green.
Eladir laughed.
I'm a paladin, not a divine fashion model.
Is that an actual occupation?
It could be.
Velis snorted.
That's quite an image. Anyway, give me a minute.
She wrote Jonan a note, then used the mirror to send it.
That's quite a useful device.
Eladir motioned to the mirror.
Have you considered making one that conveys sound?
Yeah, but it's not the best medium for it.
She thought about her earrings, but managed to avoid reaching up toward one of them. She wasn't sure how much she wanted Eladir to know.
You sure you want to be with me and not with Lydia?
The mission is what matters. And frankly, you're much more likely to need healing.
I'm pretty sure I'm offended by that.
Eladir shook his head.
Don't be. You're simply on a more dangerous assignment. It's not a reflection of your abilities.
Fair enough, I suppose. Wait, was that a mirror pun?
You're bright to have noticed.
Ugh.
The puns continued until she found a suitable place to hide. Velis introduced Eladir to Jonan, but it wasn't necessary. They'd met before, if only briefly. Jonan kept giving Eladir strange looks, but that wasn't out of character for Jonan, so Velis tried to ignore it and focus on the plan.
I'll hit the Crescent Thorn tonight. Eladir, you'll be waiting a few blocks away inside this blacksmith shop.
She pointed to the map.
You may want to check it in advance. Jonan, can you introduce him to that adjutant?
Jonan ran a hand through his hair, then took off his glasses to wipe them with a rag.
Yes, but please be cautious about including Married or Tervis in this. We don't really know their angle.
But they're definitely investigating the Shrouded One.
Sure, at least on the surface. But if the Shrouded One turns out to be a ranking official in the Thorn Guard, which seems highly likely, Married might take the Shrouded One's side.
And what about you? Wouldn't you do the same?
Eladir asked. Jonan paused to consider the question.
Depends. On?
Velis asked.
Who they work for. Keep in mind, I'm not actually a Thorn Guard. I simply work for someone connected with them. That's an understatement, but I'll forgive it.
Velis sighed.
Fine. You don't even have to be at the shop if you need deniability.
Actually, I was considering going up with you. Jonan cracked his knuckles.
I can help keep us concealed while we go through the building. Maybe, but...
She shook her head.
I'm not planning on going through the building.
Ah, Jonan nodded in understanding.
Yes, I suppose that would be a more expedient route, and I couldn't keep up. Should we try to do some long-distance scrying on the place before you head over there?
It's a black spot for scrying,
Eladir explained.
Lydia had it on her list of places to look at for signs of Sterling.
Jonan frowned.
That means they have someone with void sorcery, or at least a void enchantment. That's going to make this considerably more dangerous. Sterling could be there himself.
While the other two looked nervous about that prospect, Velis found herself smiling.
Maybe I'll get another shot at him soon, then.
Perhaps this is a bad idea, if there's any chance of Sterling.
Aladir glanced off to the side.
We could wait for the others to return.
Not a chance. Every day we wait is one more day they have to search for us. Proactivity is important here. Besides, Sterling isn't infallible. Now that I know who I'm dealing with, I can prepare for him.
Velis glanced at the Heartlands, then toward Jonan.
No,
Jonan shook his head.
It's a bad idea.
Velis rolled her eyes.
I'll just bring it as a precaution. I won't go straight after him. Promise.
Do you know if that weapon will work against a Vakes?
Aladir gestured to the spear.
Only one way to find out.
She got a pair of disapproving looks for that line, so she raised her hands in a warding gesture.
Fine, fine. We can be smart about it.
She waved at Jonan.
You can throw an invisibility spell on me right before I leave, then wait at the shop with Aladir.
The invisibility won't last long if I'm not there to maintain it. I'm much more of a sight shaper than a caller, and I need to be near you to keep reapplying the effect.
I think I might be able to extend it myself if it comes to that, but I don't anticipate this taking long. This should just be a quick jaunt, in and out. I don't plan to engage the enemy.
Void sorcery could wipe out the invisibility, Jonan pointed out.
It's probably not covering the whole building, and if it is, I'll get out fast. Very fast.
Even if you see the shrouded one? Aladir asked.
Velis hesitated.
Depends on the situation. I don't expect her to be wearing an identifying badge. I might not even know if I've seen her. But I'll plan to disengage if I'm attacked, and I'll be prepared for a fight if I have to, just in case.
Sounds safe enough. I don't think we have to be overly worried about anything,
Aladir nodded. Velis and Jonan exchanged looks, then Velis looked back to Aladir.
Never say that.
The stylistic slope of the Crescent Thorn made it easier to climb, at least for a motion sorcerer. Velis approached in the middle of the night, wearing the garb of her silk identity. Unlike when she'd approached the Thorngard Fortress, however, she'd brought the Heartlands with her. If there was any chance at all that Sterling was present, she wanted to be ready for him.
I've practiced for this. I can handle him. Eruvolar Protetaris.
A defensive field of essence surrounded her, powered by the Dominion mark Jonan had helped her link to her old armor. She found using it a little frustrating, given her bad memories of the armor, but it had worked well enough against Susan Crimson. She wouldn't turn down an extra bit of protection against whoever she was up against now.
Surge.
She blasted herself upward along the side of the sloped tower wall. While driving the Heartlance into the side of the building like a climbing spike might have made the ascent easier, she decided against it. She didn't want to trigger any defensive spells on the building or alert anyone that she was present. She landed on a ledge, then jumped again. Fortunately, there were outcroppings with standing space for each floor.
I don't know how anyone could live in a building with a slope like this. Must get absolutely nauseating. Surge!
She boosted herself upward again and again until she reached the top floor. No windows or exterior doors on this level. They must have been at least somewhat concerned about someone using this method of entry. She blasted herself upward to the roof, landing atop it. From there, she planned to search for a hatch. When she landed, she discovered she was not alone. Across the rooftop, Velis saw something uncanny. The woman wore silken veils covering her face and upper body and carried an oaken staff. The remainder of her garb was simple blacks, with a pouch and a few knives visible on her belt. Two more knives were sheathed in her tall leather boots. The build, the outfit, and even the woman's casual stance were almost identical to her own.
Even the oak staff looks like when I had the Heartlance concealed, she realized. She's an excellent reproduction.
Velis took a few steps closer, remaining cautious. She kept the Heartlance ready.
Silk, I presume?
The other woman stepped closer, but she was still a good 30 feet away. It was a large rooftop, and a precarious one, due to the building's awkward design. An obvious doorway leading to a stairwell was visible on the opposite end of the roof, near where the other silk was standing.
You're looking at her.
She rested her staff against the ground. Velis couldn't see through her veils. They seemed to have the same one-way obscuring enchantments that her own veils did, or at least similar ones.
If I can get close enough to tear them off.
I'm afraid that's my title at the moment, unless you haven't heard.
Velis inched closer, warily, searching for any signs of other possible attackers.
Sharpsight.
She couldn't quite manage a full invisibility detection spell yet, but Jonan's lessons had given her enough of a foundation to enhance her vision somewhat. The basic spell would help her catch the telltale distortion waves in the air that often signified the presence of an invisible opponent. The other woman remained still, at least for the moment.
That's where you're wrong, little pet. I've had that title for a long time. Someone else just keeps trying to give it away.
Velis paused, frowning.
You're not intending to replace me, then? Oh, gods, forgive me, no. No, that isn't it at all.
The other woman broke into hysterical laughter, bending double at the waist.
Is that what you thought? You poor child. She hasn't told you anything, has she?
Velis wrinkled her nose, understanding reaching her.
You're a previous silk, not a new one. Is this truly news to you?
The other silk lowered her staff, then began to walk closer.
She didn't send you for me. No, not directly at least. I'm not here for you. Or maybe I am.
Velis frowned.
Are you also the shrouded one?
The other silk kept walking, pausing just about 10 feet away.
Oh, yes. That's one of my newer titles. It was just Shroud at first. Why Shroud? Well, I'd very nearly died, you see. Terrible fire. I won't bore you with the details. After I recovered, I discovered that our mutual master had replaced me with a new silk. Rather than going back to Ayara immediately, I spent some time trying to discover who had masterminded the attempt to kill me. As I'm sure you know, returning to Symphony and failure would not have endeared her to me.
Velis nodded curtly.
Imagine my surprise when I learned that my dear mentor was the one who had orchestrated my demise. And so?
The other silk tugged at her veils.
I allowed her to believe that she'd succeeded, and this became my burial shroud. Poetic. I like it. But what was her motive? Paranoia, I presume. She doesn't like it when her dear children, as she calls us, begin to get close enough to her skill level to threaten her. Jealousy, maybe? Her lover's eyes wandered toward me from time to time. Or perhaps just sheer boredom.
She sighed.
Oh, I wish I knew. But it's far too late for justifications at this point. She betrayed me, and now I'm repaying her for it.
Velis shifted the grip on her spear.
With this, can I say cult? I feel like that's rude, but you have a cult.
The Shrouded One laughed.
Now, we are not a cult. We have a book, several in fact. I'd inform you of the details, but alas, we're running short on time. Time?
Velis tilted her head. What do you mean?
There are places I need to be, and sadly, I can't have you interfering with things.
Silk lifted her quarterstaff.
I'd say there's nothing personal, but that would be a lie. You're wearing my old outfit and name. I could change outfits if it'd get you to share more of your plan.
Velis grinned.
I'd like that, but I'm afraid not. I'm probably going to kill you here, but I won't make the same mistake my mentor did. Have you happened to escape? Or if those glimmering earrings of yours are actively sending a message?
They were, in fact, active and sending the sounds of their conversation to Jonan.
I can't allow whoever is on the other end to know any more details.
Velis took a step back.
No camaraderie for another silk, then? Not going to offer me a chance to join you? Distrust is the first and the last lesson that Ayara ever taught me. Perhaps if I'd reached you sooner, we could have come to some arrangement. But things are too delicate now to allow you to interfere. I can't have more variables in play. You're presuming an awful lot about how easily you're going to beat me.
The Shrouded One raised a hand.
Let me explain one more thing then, just so you understand. I'm not just a previous silk. I'm the very first to bear the title, aside from Ayara herself. You won't be the first silk I've killed.
Black flames formed around the Shrouded One's outstretched hand.
You won't even be the first Velis Jaldin that I've killed.
Velis had always prided herself on her speed. Even when fighting against Sterling, she'd managed to follow his movements. It was his strength and impervious body that had been the main problem. When the Shrouded One moved, she couldn't see it. Not because the Shrouded One had gone invisible. Her enhanced vision would have noted the blur. No, her opponent was simply so fast that she didn't process the movement, even when she'd been looking straight at her. Something cracked in her chest, and then she was flying backward from the force of the impact. Her veils were on fire. She screamed even as she flew backward to near the edge of the roof. With one hand, she drove the heart lance into the stone, arresting her movement. With the other, she tore the burning veils off her face. She'd never liked them anyway. The shrouded one appeared right in front of her, putting a finger under Velis's chin.
Sorry to end it so quickly. I know you...
Velis slammed her forehead toward the shrouded one's face. She couldn't see exactly where she was aiming, but she hoped to break the woman's nose. The shrouded one moved again, appearing 20 feet away. She was still far too fast to follow.
My, my. Still have some fight in you.
The shrouded one discarded her staff, which was now broken in the center.
Now, Meta, it'll be over soon enough.
Velis coughed, clutching at her chest. She'd been hit hard, but the armor spell from her dominion mark had absorbed some of the force of the blow. Without it, she suspected a blow with that amount of power would have crushed her ribcage. Even with the protection, she was hurting bad. She mentally thanked whatever gods that were listening that her opponent was, apparently, the monologuing type. Then she flipped the heart lance over and tapped the bottom of it against the ground. Golden lines began to flow up the surface of the spear, then onto her hands. Her mind and body quickened. When the shrouded one moved again, this time she could see it. But she still wasn't fast enough to get out of the way. Not without sorcery, at least. Surge! A blast of force carried her out of the trajectory of the shrouded one's strike. As she landed, she thrust at the shrouded one's side. Her opponent batted the jab out of the way with ease.
I've always wanted one of those.
The shrouded one stepped in, grabbing the shaft of the spear with her right hand.
I think I'll keep it.
Velis yanked on the weapon. It didn't move. The shrouded one raised her other hand, this one still swirling with black fire. Then she pointed her palm at Velis's chest.
Jump!
Velis shot into the air, still gripping the heart lance, and narrowly avoided the jet of black flame that shot into the space where she'd been standing. She didn't let go of her weapon. Neither did the shrouded one. A moment later, Velis felt herself torn from the sky as the shrouded one pulled with absurd force. Velis directed her fall.
Surge!
She blasted herself feet first into the shrouded one's chest. The shrouded one took a step back at the impact, but otherwise barely reacted. Velis braced against her opponent with both legs, pushing, but she still couldn't wrench the spear free.
She's as strong as Sterling or Talion. Maybe stronger.
Velis kicked upward with one foot, but the shrouded one grabbed her ankle. The shrouded one's hand was, of course, still on fire. Velis screamed again, then shifted tactics. She released her grip on the heart lance, still screaming in agony, and moved her hand in front of the shrouded one's face.
Burst!
A blast of kinetic energy rippled out of her hand with enough strength to shatter stone. The grip on her ankle released. Velis dropped to the ground, rolled, and concentrated on the black fire that was spreading up her pant leg.
Push!
The flames separated from her clothing and body, then dissipated in the air. When she grabbed for the heartlands, however, she found it missing. She looked up just in time to find the shrouded one looming over her.
Now that's interesting. I rarely see motion sorcery powerful enough to move other spells these days. You have quite a talent.
Velis began to push herself to her feet, only to find the tip of the heart lance at her throat.
Ah, no. Don't think my curiosity is going to permit you to leave. Sound, form, behind. I won't be permitting you to leave either, my dear. Your long years of running are at an end.
Ayara's voice echoed behind the shrouded one. He was, in Velis's opinion, one of the best impressions she'd ever managed.
Sorry, little Silk. I can sense sound sorcery. Ayara teaches all her apprentices that. You don't have any friends here. And if you're anything like me, you probably never had any true friends at all.
The heart lance moved, but not toward her. It vanished entirely. The shrouded one did spin then, but not toward the sound of Ayara. She growled and hurled a blast of black fire towards someone or something that Velis couldn't see, save for a distant blur.
Jonan?
Velis's heart pounded in her chest as she searched the area. Had her rescuer just been obliterated? She couldn't see them in the wake of the blast. So she did what came naturally and threw a punch at her now unarmed opponent.
Burst!
She enhanced her punch with motion sorcery, adding to the force of the impact. It hit the shrouded one hard enough to knock her back a step, but otherwise didn't seem to cause any damage. Except to her fist. Her knuckles cracked and bled from the force of the impact, and that was with her armor spell still active. The distraction of the punch was all she needed, though. The shrouded one had stopped commanding the black fire and turned back toward her. Velis made a rude gesture with her right hand and smiled.
Bye now. Surge!
She carried herself backward with a blast of force and off the edge of the building. As she flew backward, she pulled a knife off her belt and hurled it. The shrouded one flew after her, hesitating only a moment to deflect the thrown knife. That moment was just long enough for a wall of ice to appear in the shrouded one's path.
Ice? That means...
Velis made it off the roof and began to fall. The shrouded one blasted through the wall of ice and jumped off the building to follow her. There were no further taunts then. The shrouded one blasted herself in front of Velis with a surge of motion sorcery of her own, then threw a mid-air punch. Velis didn't have the Heartlands, but she did still have the enhanced speed it provided. That allowed her to follow the swing and grab her opponent's arm.
No!
Velis yelled. The shrouded one began to slip away almost immediately, but Velis held tight as long as she could. A blast of ice hit the shrouded one from behind, just as Velis had hoped. The ice began to spread rapidly, encasing her opponent's arms around the shoulders.
Got her!
Velis used her free hand to grab for a knife, then jammed it into her opponent's chest. The knife didn't break her opponent's skin. Then the shrouded one snapped the ice around one arm and touched a hand to it.
Useless. You still haven't figured out what you're up against, have you?
The ice vanished. Not burned by flame. Not teleported away. It vanished as it was absorbed by the shrouded one's touch, serving to further fuel her strength. And then Velis understood, too late, the nature of her foe.
Surge!
Velis tried to blast herself away, but the shrouded one grabbed her with her left hand, arresting her movement. Another blast of ice hit her from behind, but the shrouded one absorbed it again, and faster this time. Velis still couldn't see her ally, but she knew who was trying to help her.
Shiver! No more ice! She's a fake Hess!
Shiver,
The shrouded one pulled her close.
I'll remember that.
A moment later, their arms still intertwined, they hit the ground.
Surge!
Velis used motion sorcery to slow their descent just before the impact, but she still hit the ground hard. Her already injured leg buckled and she fell backward, the shrouded one on top of her.
That motion sorcery of yours is quite useful. I suppose I shouldn't let it go to waste.
The shrouded one put her hand around her throat, pinning her to the ground.
Mine now.
The shrouded one's hand flickered, and Velis felt something spread into her, reaching into her essence.
No, I won't let you.
There was a crack in the air as the foreign essence met something inside Velis's body, the same power that she'd always used to expel poison and sorcery. The dominion within her that she'd never understood. The shrouded one pulled her hand back suddenly, then let out a scream of agony.
Huh. Well, that changes things.
Then Velis punched the shrouded one again.
Expulse!
She'd never been able to push that strange dominion out of her body without a medium. Fortunately, her knuckles were bleeding, and that was enough. Essence flowed through the injuries as her fist crunched into the shrouded one's face. The shrouded one screamed again, falling backward, and Velis rolled on top of her.
Expulse! Expulse! Expulse!
Velis slammed her bleeding fist into the shrouded one as fast as she could. On the last punch, though, her enemy managed to grab her wrist. The shrouded one twisted hard. Then Velis was screaming again as bones shattered and her strength faltered. A hand grabbed her shoulder from behind.
Teleport!
Velis found herself on the ground several feet away, with Riala standing where she'd been a moment before. As she'd expected, Riala was holding the Heartlance in her other hand. She'd teleported it out of the shrouded one's grip earlier. Riala turned toward her and yelled,
Run!
Without another moment of hesitation, Velis turned and started to flee, and fell immediately as her injured leg failed her. Riala appeared next to her, then raised a wall of ice behind them.
I'm still awful at teleporting, sorry. I only think I have enough essence left to get one of us out of here. The spear!
Velis gestured at the Heartlance, which Riala was still carrying.
Please!
Riala handed it to her.
You can't beat her!
No, you're right.
Velis tapped the spear against the ground, once again activating the Heart Lance's speed-enhancing effect.
But I can make her bleed. Get going. Warn the others.
No! Riala shook her head. You're too injured. I'm sorry. You need to go. I can hold her off and teleport when I'm recovered.
The ice vanished, absorbed by the Shrouded One. Then a knife cut through the air, the same one that Velis had thrown at the Shrouded One earlier. It hit Riala right in the chest.
Oh.
Riala looked down at the weapon embedded in her chest.
Well, I guess that settles that.
Riala's hand settled on Velis's shoulder.
Take care of my brother.
And then the world blurred, and Velis was gone. Chapter 17, Talion 5, Blighted Woods. Talion absently rubbed at his left shoulder. There was little purpose to it. No amount of massaging the muscle and skin could restore the feeling that he'd lost. A fraction of his spirit was gone. It would regrow, true, perhaps stronger than before. But for the moment, Talion couldn't help but feel the absence of something ephemeral, something beyond ordinary senses. He'd felt it when she'd torn that piece from him, and she'd been honest, it had not been pleasant. When he told her that he could see the piece she'd removed in the moments before she sealed it into her own body, she'd been only mildly surprised.
That's a good sign. Seems you've developed a hint of spiritual awareness yourself.
Spiritual awareness? She nodded.
In my home back in Artenia, we strengthen the spirit throughout lifetimes of training. Our sorcery works somewhat differently there. The seven-branched sword deity and the impervious forest goddess were quite talented at it. Perhaps you've inherited a hint of their spark?
The lantern, I think, Talion rubbed at his chin. I've been noticing things more ever since I started testing it.
I suppose practicing with items can help, but most people can't develop entirely new skills from it.
Rin gave him a skeptical look.
You must have already had some talent beforehand.
Talion shrugged. Not that I noticed, but I suppose it's always possible. Can you teach me to do more with it? Maybe starting with how to resist other people tearing out bits of my spirit? Rin laughed.
Don't think you'll have to worry about that much, but sure. I can give you some basic lessons sometime, when we have a few weeks free.
She took a breath.
Thank you, by the way. I feel much better already. Your spirit composition is different enough that it should help hold for a while.
Different?
Rin nodded. You can see each of my spirit marks as being like a combination lock that the world maker has to crack if it wants to break out. The essence composition of each mark is the combination. The world maker needs to push opposing essence through to counter it properly. Your spiritual essence is sufficiently odd that I suspect it'll take some time to negate.
If it's like a lock, does that imply it's useless if the world maker figures it out once? Rin shook her head.
Not exactly. The seals recover while I rest in stasis, as I mentioned before. Then the world maker has to spend the essence necessary to force their way through each and every seal to make progress. That means that every seal I add makes the process more difficult for the maker, but as long as they remember the necessary essence types for each seal, they can bypass the old seals relatively quickly.
Talion rubbed at his shoulder more. What keeps you from just adding a whole bunch of seals at once?
I need variety in terms of essence types. To go back to the combination example, adding two locks with the exact same combination would add a bit of protection, but much less than an entirely different lock. Ordinary people only represent the same few hundred sets of locks based on the types of sorcery they have available. Powerful sorcerers offer me the most value, but as I'm sure you understand, they also tend to be the most reticent to offer up a piece of their spirit to another powerful sorcerer.
Couldn't you explain the severity of the problem to a sorcerer's college or something?
I have.
She shook her head.
It usually doesn't go over well, but I've succeeded from time to time. That's why I do have hundreds of seals already.
The Witch of a Thousand Shadows. They should have called you the Witch of a Thousand Souls. Talion grinned.
It's 788 now, but close enough.
Rin stood and stretched.
Ready to go find a magic rock?
You bet. I love magic rocks. Talion stood as well. Where are we headed?
The Blighted Woods.
Talion wrinkled his nose and began to head back to the tavern proper. Isn't that place, blighted?
I can shield us from the disease. We'll need to be cautious and get in and out quickly, though.
There are things there that aren't going to be pleasant to deal with. And even with your contribution to my spirit, I'm going to have to be cautious. Every time I use a spirit art, this thing,
she jerked a thumb at her back,
tends to struggle to break free.
Spirit arts? Are those what your spells are called? Rin nodded.
That's about right. They're a little more complicated and flexible than what you'd call a spell, but sure, go with that. I have a lot of spirit arts I've picked up over the years, but most of them are inaccessible because I need to use them to maintain the seal. More recently acquired spirit arts aren't as risky for me to use, since they're further from the center of the seal structure. But most of my strongest arts are the old ones near the center.
Meaning you're at a significant combat disadvantage right now. That's unfortunate. Could I help you acquire more of these spirit arts? Talion asked.
Rin shook her head. The piece of spirit you gave me serves a similar function, but broader. I could probably leverage a hint of your abilities, but given how odd they feel, I don't think it's a good idea. And as I mentioned, your spirit piece is a useful lock. I shouldn't discard it.
Talion nodded. Do you know where the thing we're looking for is located?
No.
Rin shook her head.
Not exactly. But I think I know who can help us find it.
They emerged from the vault and headed back into the tavern. Upon exiting the back room, Talion spotted someone, stopped, and stared. Lydia? It had been close to a year since Talion had seen Lydia last. She'd left for Hardigan's Tower after the disastrous fight with Sterling, and he'd been assigned to his own tasks far from her. He'd wanted to visit, to see how her injuries had been healing, but... Lydia lifted a single hand, the one that wasn't currently resting on her cane, and offered him a wave.
It's good to see you, Talion.
He rushed closer, wrapping her in a hug.
Hey!
There was a brief pause, then she lowered her head to rest it against his shoulder.
Hey.
He pulled her a little tighter.
You're crushing me a little.
He released her, backing away.
Sorry. You okay?
Lydia laughed.
I'm fine. Better now that I can see you're actually here.
Talion raised an eyebrow. You here for me?
In part.
She adjusted her glasses, straightening her back and turning toward Rin.
Prime Lady Jaden, I presume?
Yep.
Rin flashed her a grin.
You can just call me Rin, though. I take it you're the famous Lydia Hastings.
Lydia's grin slipped a bit.
I'm not certain what you mean by famous, but yes.
Rin walked closer and gave Talion a nudge.
You didn't tell me she was a redhead. And cute. You and your dad have the same type.
Talion and Lydia's jaws both dropped just a little. Rin snorted.
You should see your faces.
She slapped Talion on the back, then whispered in his ear.
It's definitely true, though.
Talion let out an exasperated sigh.
It's not like that. She's my commanding officer.
Uh-huh. Nice salute when she showed up.
Talion glared.
And can you please never bring up my supposed father's preferences again? I really didn't need to know that.
Oh, foe. Don't be such a baby. It's well known that the impervious forest goddess had red hair.
Rin folded her arms.
And, you know, his other...
Don't want to hear it.
He put a finger over her lips. Rin tried to bite him, but he pulled his finger back in time to avoid it.
Well, you two seem quite familiar.
Lydia reached up and adjusted her glasses again. They'd looked fine beforehand, so Talion was pretty sure it was just a nervous habit.
If you wouldn't mind, is there somewhere I can sit? Oh, of course. I didn't mean to be so inhospitable. Please.
Rin waved at the nearest table.
Where's Asphodel? I figured she was still helping out up here.
Lydia frowned.
She was supposed to be here, but I haven't seen her. Admittedly, I haven't been here long, though. Perhaps she's just sleeping?
Or maybe she knows something we don't and she's chosen to go off and do something secret. Again?
Talion sighed.
Lydia raised an eyebrow. Has that been a particularly large problem of late, Talion?
She's being even more vague than usual. Something's bothering her, I can tell. Something serious. I think she's afraid.
Any idea of what?
Lydia tilted her head to the side.
Sterling, perhaps?
Seems likely, but I get the feeling it's more than just that.
Talion shook his head.
I don't know. But what I do know is that it's fortunate that you're here.
Assuming you're staying?
For the moment, I believe I am. A certain irritating old sage directed me to Miss Jaden here.
Old sage?
Rin frowned.
Taran? That old coot sent you to me?
Lydia nodded.
Indeed. Wait, Eric Tarin? Did he tell you anything about... Not much in regards to your background, I'm afraid. Some interesting revelations in the grander scale of things, but nothing I should talk about in the open. He did, however, tell me to inform you that he's in Salir right now if you'd like to visit after your business is concluded.
Talion took a breath. Got it. Do you have an address? She passed him a note card. He slipped it in the pouch at his side. Thanks. Rin sat down on the top of a nearby table.
Well, if Tarin wanted you to come see me, we're in for something big. And probably not in a fun way. You got any ideas on what that might be? I do, but can we talk somewhere a bit more secure if we're getting into business?
Rin looked around the tavern, then sighed.
Fine, fine. Back to the back room. Follow me. Is this...
Lydia gestured at the door.
Yep,
Rin replied.
It's a Zixian vault. Or it was, at least. I repurposed it.
Lydia seemed to look at Rin with a new appreciation.
That is quite an impressive boast, Miss Jaden. Rin, please. Miss Jaden was my sister.
She gave a wink, as if making a joke that neither Talia nor Lydia understood.
Apologies if I offended.
Lydia frowned.
Rin, then. You can open this place?
Rin opened the vault door.
And there you have it. Please step inside. It's secure.
Lydia glanced at Talian. It's true. I've been inside a couple times. They all stepped in. Rin whispered a few words and the vault doors closed behind them.
Okay, secure. From both physical and sorcerous threats.
Lydia nodded.
May I check a few things? Be my guest.
Rin waved around the huge empty entrance room.
My vault is your vault. Except, you know, that it isn't. Don't touch anything.
Lydia nodded absently.
Dominion of knowledge, illuminate your sources. Dominion of knowledge, detect the presence of void. Dominion of knowledge, detect the presence of sight.
She continued mumbling spells for several more moments before nodding to Rin.
It is satisfactory. Glad my place meets your approval. Now what was all that about?
Lydia sat down on the floor, then let out a deep sigh.
We were being scryed on. I detected multiple different spells watching us while we were outside. Potent ones.
Rin let out a string of curses.
You're certain? Absolutely. At least one source from the direction of Salir, another from...
She frowned, then pointed up and to the side.
This way? And a third I couldn't trace. I wasn't able to determine the specific person scrying in any of the cases. They all had countermeasures. Ordinarily, I'd have spirit arts active to detect that, but right now...
Rin sighed, shaking her head.
Your Mithralian magic is always so bothersome. Mithralian? Then you're...
Rin shrugged a shoulder and sat down across from Lydia.
Artenian, originally.
Talian sat as well. You were going to tell me about some of your background at some point.
Sure, sure. Now's not the time, though. If your friend here is up for it, we should be getting on the road as soon as possible. The road? Where precisely are you headed, then?
Lydia winced, stretching out her bad leg. The Blighted Woods, Talian explained. We're looking for a crystal. One very similar to one you're already familiar with. Lydia's eyes widened.
You found another one? Wait, hold on. Another one? What haven't you told me, Sal?
Rin turned to Talian. Sorry. Talian gave her an apologetic look. I think Lydia would probably explain better. He turned to Lydia.
I'm not entirely certain I'm comfortable discussing this matter, Talian. She is not a paladin, or even a follower of our faith. And, meaning no disrespect, Prime Lady Jaden, but you are a somewhat infamous broker of information.
Rin waved a hand dismissively.
Why'd I be offended by that? Course I am. Still, tell me all about your rock. I'm dying to know.
We can trust her, Lydia. At least on this matter. Her interests are aligned with ours, and, well, she knew my family. Or, I mean, the gods that supposedly sired me. Lydia blinked.
Pardon? Yeah, yeah. Knew the seven-branched sword deity and the impervious forest goddess. I'll catch you up on all that later. Honestly, don't need to know much about your rock unless it can help lead us to the other ones.
Ones? Talian frowned. There are more than two?
Should be three total,
Rin explained.
Maybe four. We don't need them all right now.
but I have a feeling that we're going to want as much information on these as we can before we leave.
Why?
Talion asked.
Because given that we were being scryed on, I'm pretty sure we're about to walk into a trap.
Lydia nodded.
I concur. I'll trade you some information. I need to know everything I've missed that Talion is already aware of, and then I'd like some insight on whoever you believe might have an interest in watching us. Their strength, disposition, location, allies, assets, enemies, weaknesses.
Excellent.
Rin rubbed her hands together.
I love trades. And then,
Lydia sat up a little straighter, turning her gaze to Rin, then to Talion.
We set a trap of our own.
One part of a seasonal goddess, eh?
Talion pondered what Lydia had explained to them about the stones as he walked.
Maybe we could put her back together. Not sure the Taos Pantheon would appreciate more competition, though. Assuming they're still around and all.
It was only midday, but the forest grew darker as they marched. There was nothing sorcerous about it. They were simply getting into an area where the tree cover was so heavy that minimal light managed to break through. That did make it even harder to notice the shadows following behind them.
One of these days, I need to take a vacation and just fight in a tournament or something. None of this subterfuge, just someone in front of me I can swing a sword at.
Instead, he turned his attention toward Lydia. She was still walking with a cane, but she didn't seem to have much difficulty keeping up with them. He could sense a metal core inside the cane, too, indicating a concealed blade.
I approve.
She had an ordinary dagger on her hip, too, but he wasn't going to complain about someone having an excessive number of weapons. Rin had them both beaten in that regard. He could sense over a dozen knives in various parts of her clothing, and that wasn't even counting whatever she had in her newly reclaimed box.
How'd your training with Hardigan go?
He asked her.
It was quite productive. I've learned the foundation of a couple new sorcery types and improved my existing skills substantially.
Talion nodded. Any new tricks you want to show off?
Perhaps when we're not on a time commitment. I have a feeling I may need all of my strength for the Blighted Woods.
That's wise, Rin cut in. We should all conserve our strength. The Blighted Woods are dangerous, even without other concerns.
They caught her meaning.
What can you tell me about the dangers in the Blighted Woods? The barrier around them has been up for centuries. Do you know what's actually in there?
Rin nodded.
In generalities, at least. I wasn't there for much of what happened, but I'm familiar with the origins of the Blight itself.
Lydia gave Rin an appraising look.
There's been a great deal of scholarly debate about that over the years. I would be appreciative if you could lend some insight.
Sure, sure.
Rin paused, seeming to consider something.
Okay. Vendria told you about Rendalir a bit. Did she explain much about what happened there?
Lydia slowed her steps, giving Rin an odd look.
A bit? Are you implying Vendria is connected to the Blighted Woods?
Rin shook her head.
No. I mean, probably not. You probably know more about Vendria's history than I do. But the Blighted Woods is a Rendalir-related problem.
Lydia made an odd expression, then nodded.
How so?
Maybe start from the beginning for my benefit,
Talion asked.
I know Rendalir was another world, and that it was destroyed by one of its world makers. I know Vendria is from there. I don't know a lot beyond that.
Rin nodded.
Right. So, Rendalir was destroyed, but some people managed to escape, and a number of those people ended up right here on Mithralis. That didn't mean they were safe, however. They were followed,
Lydia added.
The Sun Eater came after them.
Rin turned toward Talion.
So, the Sun Eater was the world maker that was directly responsible for Rendalir's destruction, but he also had followers. Some were humans who simply chose to serve him to save themselves. Others, however, were entirely different species. The Karna are body-consuming shapeshifters, for example. And most importantly for our destination, there were two related types of creatures. Ruin Shades and Vak. Vendria mentioned Ruin Shades, though only briefly.
Lydia winced, bending over briefly to rub her leg.
A blend of a ruin elemental and a spirit, essentially? More or less. More shade than spirit, but some of both. They served as the bulk of the Sun Eater's forces. They're essentially shadow copies of individual people, but entirely under the Sun Eater's control.
Shadow copies of people. Lovely. And what were those other ones then, Vek?
Talion asked.
Vec are worse. At first, the people of Rendalair believed Vec were caused by a disease. They called it the Vec taint. It manifested as strange symbols appearing across a person's body, spreading across them over time.
Lydia wrinkled her nose.
Like those tattoos of yours?
No, not like that.
Rin smiled.
Nice try, though. The Vec taint was facial markings, and they didn't look as lovely or organized as my tattoos. Anyway, they're not actually a disease. They're more like a form of possession. Vec are what happens when a ruined shade manages to claw its way inside a living human's body, gradually taking them over. Stronger ruined shades don't even need to inhabit the body directly. They just break off a small piece of themselves, and that piece is used to take over a person's body.
Talion's eyes narrowed.
That sounds horrific. Is there any way to counter it? Banishment, sorcery?
Only if you catch it fast.
She drew in a breath.
And that was the problem with the Blighted Woods. You see, when people from Rendalair fled here, ruined shades followed, and our people had no idea what they were. And when the ruined shades began to infect people, we made the same mistakes that the people of Rendalair did at first. We thought it was a disease.
Rin shook her head, sighing.
Several small towns had been entirely taken over before any help arrived. The first people who went to help were also taken over, and they began to spread it further, much like it was a disease. It took ages before we actually had enough information to act. You say we? Were you physically there?
Lydia asked.
No. I'm using we in the general sense of people from Mithralis. I'm not quite that old.
She grinned.
Ultimately, it was one of the gods that intervened. Carasalia, the impervious forest goddess. She saved those that were still capable of being saved. Rather than slaughter the others, she created a vast barrier around the area, sealing them inside, like one might quarantine a disease. She returned time and time again, trying to find a way to save those within, but she never succeeded.
Carasalia, my supposed mother?
He'd heard very little of her, given that she wasn't a member of the Taos Pantheon or associated with Valian. It was refreshing to hear a story that included her, even if it hadn't ended well.
So what about the trees?
Lydia asked.
I've heard the trees beyond the barrier are stark white and give off some kind of strange powder. Are they possessed by the ruined shades as well?
No, but it's a consequence of their presence.
Vec don't require the same kind of sustenance that ordinary humans do. They absorb life energy from the environment. The trees were most likely altered to serve as long-term life sources, either deliberately or accidentally. I don't know the types of sorcery that were used, but I do know that the powder the trees emit is poisonous to ordinary humans. I have defensive spells that should help.
Wait, hold on. Are you implying there is still Vec living in there? After centuries? Talion asked.
Oh no.
Rin shook her head.
It's only ruined shades we'll have to worry about.
Talion frowned. How intelligent are these ruined shades? Do they have emotions? Societies?
Nothing to worry about in that regard. The average ruined shade is more like an insect, if even that. Maybe a golem would be a better comparison. They can follow instructions with some degree of intelligence, but they have no motivations of their own. Their instructions are implanted with a seed of dream sorcery, which was one of the Sun Eater's specialties.
Lydia made an odd expression at that, seemingly considering something. Rin continued to explain.
Most Vec are no more intelligent than ruined shades. They're little more than puppets. Vec made from ruined shades, possessing beings other than humans, are much smarter and more dangerous, but they're not something we're likely to run into. They're pretty rare.